Good afternoon, and thank you for standing by. I would like to inform all parties that your lines have been placed on listen-only until the question-and-answer portion of today's conference. This call is being recorded. If you should have any objection, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to introduce your first speaker, Ms. Catherine Pagan. Thank you, ma'am. You may begin.
On behalf of the National Kidney Foundation, today's panelists and faculty, welcome. I'm Kathy Pagan, the National Kidney Foundation's Transplant Services Program Director, and I'll be your moderator for tonight's People Like Us Coffee House Conversations, Taking and Affording Immunosuppressive and Other Medications. We have a great presentation for you tonight featuring Richard White, transplant recipient, Lara Tushla, transplant social worker.
Hello.
Tracy Anderson Haig, clinical transplant pharmacist.
Hi.
To field questions, I'll be joined by Deborah Smith.
Hi.
Yes. Hey, Deborah. End-stage renal disease specialist from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services New York office. And Troy Zimmerman, vice president of government relations from the National Kidney Foundation Washington, D.C. office.
Hello.
And we may also be joined by Doc Cianciano, senior vice president of NKF Health Policy and Research. All resources we talk about tonight can be found at National Kidney Foundation's homepage, kidney.org. Again, www.kidney.org. And you can always call us at 800-622-9010, 800-622-9010. And don't worry, I'll repeat this. Tonight, this topic is timely, not just because of the downturn in the economy, but also because legislation is pending in Congress to extend Medicare coverage of immunosuppressive medications for people with end-stage renal disease. Introduced in March to both the House, H.R. 1458, and Senate, S-565, by Republicans and Democrats, its passage is a top legislative priority for NKF. Ask your representative to co-sponsor this bill, which will extend Medicare past the current 36 months after a kidney transplant to the life of a kidney. By joining the NKF Take Action Network, you can contact your legislator and explain that such assistance to kidney recipients would help them keep their organs and reduce the possibility of their needing another kidney transplant. Passage of this bill is part of the National Kidney Foundation's In the Wait initiative, a roadmap to implement tested and proven strategies that will effectively end the wait for kidney transplants in 10 years, allowing everyone who needs one to get one. Take action, In the Wait, and all resources mentioned today can be found at www.kidney.org. To get right to the Take Action Network, add a / Take Action to www.kidney.org. So it's kidney.org/take-action. Now, though kidney and non-kidney transplant recipients may take many of the same medications, there are unique differences with Medicare coverage. This bill would not affect non-kidney patients. Because coverage, resources, and concerns vary depending on the type of organ transplant you had, when and where you had your transplant, where you live, your income, your assets, your work status, your age, your marital status, and more, we do want to hear about your unique challenges during the question and answer period, which will follow the panelists' presentation. So without further ado, let's get started. With great pleasure, let me present Richard White, who will tell you about his journey affording and taking medications. Richard?
Well, good evening, everyone. Rich White here. I'm a kidney transplant patient, and I had my transplant 3 years ago. I was blessed to have my brother donate a kidney to me before I reached total kidney failure. Since the transplant, everything has worked well with my kidney, and my health has been good overall, so I feel very lucky. I've also spent 25 years in the health insurance industry managing health and prescription drug insurance programs. So my experience with medication is as a patient and from the insurance company point of view as well. After a transplant, many of us know that there are things that we need to do to manage ourselves to keep us healthy, such as diet, preventing infections, exercise. But the most important of all for a transplant patient is managing the medications that keep you healthy. The anti-rejection medications are really our key to health and life. Without immunosuppressant medication, within days, the body can reject an organ transplant. If a rejection episode is caught immediately, medical professionals renal may be able to save the organ, or it may be lost, which means dialysis or another transplant. While it may seem obvious that transplant patients have to keep taking their medication, quite a number don't. They stop taking their medication, some of them stop taking their medications and end up losing their transplant. This is preventable if the patient stays on top of taking medications when they should. When you first start taking medication for a transplant, it can seem like a lot to do, but once you get organized, it will become a habit that you do every day, and it will become a normal part of life. I want to relate some of my experiences with medication, things I've learned to do better in managing my own health and my transplant. I hope some of these things will help others to have a better experience with their transplant medication. The first issue I'd like to talk about is Medicare Part B. I'm lucky enough to have a job where I'm covered by private commercial insurance, and it's a good policy, and so I feel comfortable with that. But when I had my transplant, I didn't see any reason why I should sign up for Medicare, because I already had good commercial insurance. What I didn't realize is that if you don't sign up for Medicare Part B within a certain time period after your transplant, you may not be eligible to have your medications covered under Medicare Part B years later when you retire.
And Richard, that's B as in boy, right?
That's right, Part B as in boy. And so it's very important for every transplant patient to apply for Medicare and to also buy Medicare Part B in order to make sure that they have medication coverage when they go on to Medicare later, whether that's due to disability or retirement or whatever it may be. But that was a lesson I learned, and in fact, I only found out about that because of my involvement in the National Kidney Foundation. Someone told me about it, and I immediately went and signed up in time to get it. But a lot of people don't necessarily understand that, so that's critical. I've also had an experience with COBRA coverage. And as COBRA, as some of you may know, is the coverage you can get after you leave your employment. It allows you to have coverage for a certain number of months, guaranteed, as long as you're willing to pay for it. And so I did sign up for COBRA after I left my previous job. And what I found was that it was very, very expensive. And so I'm just letting people understand that you have to pay the full cost of COBRA. But the good news is that coverage is available for a limited period. It's usually 18 months for an individual, and I think it's 36 for a family.
That's
for family members.
Right, for people who, with their company and then meet certain conditions.
That's right.
Right.
So that was a good experience. The other thing that not everyone is aware of is that there is a law which is known as HIPAA, which I think is the Health Insurance Portability Act, which guarantees that someone who is covered under a group health insurance plan for enough of a period of time can go out and get an individual policy after they leave employment. And not everyone knows this, and so some people don't sign up in enough time to be able to get it. I think there's like 60 or 63 days after you leave or after your COBRA coverage ends in which you have to sign up for an individual health insurance policy. But because of this law, it's guaranteed that you would get that health insurance coverage, so you could have your transplant medications covered as well as other things. But very important to be aware of that, especially if you're changing jobs or losing jobs, whatever the case may be. Switching gears a little here, transplant patients have to take responsibility for themselves. And I say that because when you're in a transplant program, in the beginning, the transplant teams are unbelievably focused on taking care of you. And they do a wonderful job. My own experience was fabulous. But at a point, they have to start taking care of the newer transplant patients, and you have to take care of yourself. And there really aren't enough medical care providers to hold your hand through every single step of taking care of yourself. So you really have to, almost from the beginning, decide I'm going to focus on everything I need to know, and I have to make sure I know all the important facts about my medication, especially. And so that's a critical part of managing your transplant medication. Now I'm going to talk about a few things having to do with managing medication on a daily basis, because I think one of the tricks to doing this well is just making sure you're organized so that you do take your medication on a regular basis as prescribed. Many of us today have phones that have alarms on them. I happen to use my phone, and I'm able to set a couple of alarms, and I set those alarms at my medication time so that I'm always reminded when to take my medication. I found when I don't have these alarms, I'm not as consistent about taking my medication at the prescribed time. And so this keeps me on track, and I make sure that I take it. Also, a lot of phones today, you can go on the internet and you can download programs that give you multiple alarms, because not every phone has multiple alarms. There are also watches with alarms, which are relatively inexpensive, that can be purchased, which can also remind you to take your medication. And I found that to be really one of the keys to my being able to be consistent with my medication. Another tip is that you should always have your next couple of doses of medication with you wherever you are, because you never know when you're going to not be able to make it home for whatever reason that may be, whether it's a car accident or you get held up at work or the train isn't running on time. You never know. But if you have the next couple of doses, you can rest assured that you won't get caught somewhere without your medication to put your health at risk. Another tip is to never check your medication into bags that you're checking on an airline. Always carry it on an airplane. And I've personally had the experience where I carried a bag on an airplane, and the flight attendant said, oh, there's not enough room for any more bags on the plane, so you're going to have to check that. And my medication was in that bag. And I thought at the moment I shouldn't let her check it without taking the medication out, but I did it anyway. And then they lost the bag. And luckily, I was going to New York City, where I could get a hold of a doctor and a pharmacy within hours, even though it was 11 o'clock at night, and get reissues of my prescription. And so it didn't turn into an emergency. But there aren't a lot of places in the world where you could have done that, because of just there's so much available in New York. But anyway, it's a lesson learned that you should always keep your medication on you and not check in the bags somewhere on an airplane. When you're traveling, if you travel, and I have to travel quite a bit for work, I find that time zones really goof me up in terms of taking my medication, especially if you're traveling to other parts of the world. You want to stay consistent with your medication, and once again, if you have like a phone with alarms or a watch with alarms, it can help keep you on track. But you have to be very careful when you're traveling, because you can just forget about it very easily because you're in a different time zone. Also, when you're traveling, you should always carry quite a bit of extra medication with you. You never know if you're going to be in a place where there's just no way to get your medications because you're so far away from any place that may have them. So you should always carry quite a bit of supply. For instance, if I go to Europe on business, which I do from time to time, I'll take 2 weeks of medication with me, even if I'm only going to be gone for 2 or 3 days. That way I know that I'm going to be well covered if anything should come up, so that I don't have to worry about it. Another tip is that you should always have an RX list or your prescription list with you in your purse or in your wallet, so that if you lose your medication or if you end up in an emergency room or other places like that, you always have it available so that you can show it to your doctors, either for reissue of your prescription or to just make sure that medical professionals know what medications you're on, because that's always a risk with all the medications we have to take as transplant patients, that there could be an interaction with some other medication that they're going to use in the emergency room, wherever you need to go. Now I'm going to move on to a different subject, which has to do with dealing with insurance companies and pharmacy benefit managers. And since I've done this as both a patient and from the other side of that as the insurance company, I have some tips here that I think could be helpful. The first one is that exceptions, insurance companies make a lot of exceptions. Often when you talk to a customer service rep, you'll get an answer like, absolutely no, that's against our rules. We can't make an exception. It's not necessarily true. Insurance companies make a lot of exceptions to their rules. And the key is you just need to know how to ask. And that's the first step, is ask. If they have rules or you have a benefits booklet that says it doesn't do this or it doesn't do that, that doesn't mean you can't ask. Because there's a lot of managers who have the authority to make exceptions within insurance companies and pharmacy benefit managers. And the people who ask often get exceptions. So don't think that the rules are hard and fast in every case. The other thing is that if you're talking to a customer service rep on the phone, don't be afraid to ask for their supervisor or for a manager if you're not getting what you want. It happens all the time, and every insurance company that services customers is used to having supervisors and managers available for people who want to talk to them. It's not always easy because they could be on a phone call with somebody else and you have to wait. But they can make exceptions. They have more authority than the account reps. And so you may get what you need by being able to talk to a supervisor or a manager. Also, if you're not getting what you want from your insurance company, write the CEO. If you believe strongly that you should be getting an exception, write to the CEO. Most insurance companies, the CEO will give that to a very high-level executive, and that executive will be expected to follow through on that issue that's been brought to the CEO's attention. And that doesn't mean you're going to get what you want, but they will certainly take a very hard look at it. And a lot of insurance companies are very large organizations, and all large organizations have some bureaucracy associated with them, and sometimes you get caught in the bureaucracy. You need somebody of higher authority to kind of cut through it for you, get to the right answer. But don't be afraid to ask, and don't be afraid to write to a CEO or a high-level officer or manager. Throughout my career, I've gotten a number of those kinds of letters, and I'd say in a large percentage of the cases, I've made exceptions for people who asked for them because it made sense. But they just hadn't gotten to the person of the right level of authority to get that exception. So, and then last but not least, if your insurance company or your benefits manager is not giving you what you need, you can complain to the insurance department. Every state has an insurance department with an area that specifically focuses on complaints from consumers. Every complaint is sent back to the insurance company, and it has to be handled by the insurance company. They have to respond to the insurance department with their response. Now, sometimes the response will be, we did the right thing, and according to our contract, we don't have to make an exception. And that's fine. You know, that happens. But there are a lot of times when the insurance company will say, oh, we made a mistake, we're going to correct it, and we're going to give that customer what they asked for. And so those people are there to help you, and you should take advantage of them because they will make sure that they at least look at it. And then last but not least, in terms of experiences with signing up for Medicare, this different subject now, I think it's a fairly good process, but I would say like a lot of governmental processes, you have to be prepared to spend time signing up for Medicare or Medicare Part B, which means, you know, blocking out time on your schedule to go to the Social Security offices where these things have to be done, and having all of the documentation that they're going to be prepared in advance. Because if you don't do advanced preparation for signing up for these things, they're going to send you back. They're not going to allow you to sign up if you don't bring proper things like Social Security cards and other types of things that are. So those are my prepared remarks, and I know we're going to have a Q&A a little later, and I look forward to any questions.
Well, thank you so much, Rich. And as you were talking, I was jotting down little notes and questions. I hope our listeners were as well, because you can certainly refer to them, and we'll be just delighted to hear from you during the discussion period. Now, Lara Tushla is a transplant social worker at Rush Presbyterian Medical Center in Chicago, a member of the Council of Nephrology Social Workers. She had worked in dialysis for many years before transplant and is a former editor for the National Kidney Foundation's Transplant Chronicles. Gives me great pleasure to introduce Lara as our next speaker.
Thank you. And I think the first thing I'd like to say is that health insurance is incredibly confusing. And for people who have gaps in their coverage or no health insurance coverage at all, can be extremely scary for folks. And I want to talk a little bit about some of those things in my portion of the discussion today. The very first thing I'd like to say is that it is important to talk to your transplant team if you are having trouble with affording or managing your medications as well as health care bills. In order to sort of organize my thoughts, I wanted to share a few sort of general things for folks who have Medicare, because a lot of kidney folks do, and then use an example of a woman that I'm working with to give some ideas, and then finish my portion with some resources for places you can go for more information and for some help. Everyone's situation is different, but there are some things with Medicare that we've sort of learned the hard way here that I'd like to share with you. The first is that I think it's important for people to know which part of Medicare is supposed to be covering your anti-rejection medicine. Part B as in boy or D as in dog. As Rich said, that B for a lot of folks is what's covering it. But it is a very confusing thing when you've got two parts of insurance that can cover prescription medications. And the pharmacies get confused. Often you're their only transplant person. For most people, Medicare Part D as in boy is responsible for 80% of the cost of the anti-rejection medicines, but there are a couple of exceptions. If you did not have Medicare at the time of your transplant, or if you did not have your transplant at a Medicare-approved facility, then Part D as in dog is responsible. For most folks, it is B, though. Anti-rejection medicines are an either-or situation. They are either covered by Part D as in boy or D as in dog. Part D cannot pick up the 20% copay. If you lose your Part D as in boy coverage, Part D cannot cover the anti-rejection medicine. And the other thing that's important for folks to know is how you're eligible for Medicare. If you have Medicare because of your kidney disease only, Medicare will end 3 years after a transplant. If you have Medicare because of a disability other than kidney disease or are over 65 years old, you do not have that same time limit. If you don't know exactly how Medicare has you coded in their system, it would be worth a phone call to Social Security. If you're going to lose Medicare 3 years after the transplant, it's helpful to get some advance notice on that so you can start getting ready to go back to work. As I said, I'd like to use an example of a woman that I'm working with to give you some ideas of how we've thought through her situation. I'm going to talk about a woman named Maria who got a kidney transplant here about 10 years ago. At the time of her transplant, she had Medicare and insurance through her husband's job. Her Medicare ended 3 years after her transplant, and she's had coverage through her husband's job ever since. Recently, Maria came in telling me that her husband had been laid off, and that it seemed like the plant was closing. He had been there for 25 years. She was told that she could get COBRA, but they were quoted in the neighborhood of $500 a month for a premium, which is something they could not manage. Her husband was applying for unemployment, but had not received anything yet and was anticipating getting a check of around $300 a week. When Maria came to me, she was going to be completely uninsured about in a few weeks from when we were talking. So we had to think through some options. So sort of the first thing we looked at is there a way that we could help her keep that health insurance? $500 is a pretty high premium, but it's fairly common for COBRA to be that kind of level, as Rich was saying. You're paying for, in her case, family coverage at, I think it's 105% they can charge you up to. So there are a couple of programs that can help with premiums or copays on medicines. the HealthWell Foundation, and the Patient Access Network, and I'll mention their contact information at the end. Given the amount of grants that they can offer and the cost of her COBRA premiums, that might help her in the short run, but it would not help long term. She would run through that grant pretty quickly. Should we consider applying for Medicare or Medicaid, which is our state? I think Medicaid has different names in different states, but it's a state assistance program. One of the criteria to qualify for both of those programs, at least in Illinois, is that she would have to qualify as being disabled. And to be disabled, you would have to have at least a doctor saying you can't do any kind of work for at least a year. Her kidney function is very stable, and she's got some other medical problems, but nothing to the point where the doctors here, at least, would be able to say she could not work. So she, Medicare and Medicaid were not an option for her. So can Maria herself work? And we have definitely talked about this, and this is probably her best long-term plan, but this is a tough economy, and it's hard to know how long it would take either her or her husband to get back into the workforce and to have insurance start. So it's a great long-term plan, but what are we going to do in the short run? So we're left with a variety of patient assistance programs. When we do this, we're really creating sort of a patchwork quilt of coverage to take care of her and her kidney. So we have done an application for the hospital's charity care program, which provides each hospital and each program has slightly different guidelines. Here, depending on your income, you could qualify for free care, or there's some sliding scale benefits. So she can continue to see the doctors, have blood work done, and other tests that the doctors may recommend. We gave her vouchers for medication. The companies that make some of the anti-rejection medicines have 30-day vouchers for free medicine. So we gave her a voucher for Prograf and Myfortic so she could have a month's worth of medicine while we were working on longer-term programs. The long-term programs are the patient assistance program. Pretty much every company out there that makes brand-name medicines has assistance programs. So we have started the application process for her anti-rejection medicines and a couple of other medicines that she's on that are pretty expensive. Those application processes take a little while, so the vouchers are kind of a nice bridge. And then finally, a lot of the large retail stores have generic medication programs where at least several of the ones around here, you can get a month's worth of medicine for $4. So the doctor and nurse looked at her medicine list to see if they could make any switches, and a few of her medicines they were comfortable switching to generic. So it's a lot easier and less stressful to have an insurance card, but this patchwork quilt of benefits will help Maria maintain her health and the health of her kidney. I think the most important part of this story is that Maria asked for help. She let us know as soon as she could that she was going to be losing her insurance and would be needing help in caring for her kidney. We can't help if we don't know. If you are financially struggling taking care of your transplant, the first thing you should do is call somebody at the transplant program. Sometimes it's the transplant coordinator is the person that you have the most contact with, and they or somebody else in the program can help you. I have a lot of people who call me directly as the social worker. Some centers it's a financial coordinator, but we're as committed to taking care of the kidney as you are. There also are some very specific programs for different states. So there are some state renal programs that can help transplant folks. There are regional foundations and community groups that can also be helpful. So the resources at the National Kidney Foundation's website are wonderful, but sometimes there are also some very local programs that might be helpful. I wanted to mention a couple of programs that, in addition to what Kathy had mentioned, The first is that I like to remind folks, if you were in the military and eligible for veterans benefits, it's worth looking into whether you could use their services. We have some folks that get their medicines through there and some of their primary health care. There are also community health clinics that are in a lot of areas, and they work on sliding scales for fees. They generally cannot take care of the transplants, but they can help with blood pressure management, diabetes, cholesterol. So they might be able to help with some of the other pieces. And I just wanted to mention a few things that we have from, particularly about medications, because that's where a lot of folks are bring concerns to me, at least. So I wanted to, some of these were in Maria's story. So a 30-day voucher for free medicine. We have them for my Fordyx neural prograft. They're a once-in-a-lifetime offer, so you can't use them more than once, but it's a great bridge. There are copay assistance cards. The manufacturers have of prograft, my Fordyx neural self-up, have created assistance cards if you are getting your medicine through a private insurance. Then you can use these. They will take $100 off of your copay on your medicines, and for most people that covers the cost of their copays. There are nonprofit foundations, and there's the HealthWell Foundation and Patient Access Network. They can help with copay assistance on the anti-rejection medicines and can offer premium assistance. I use a lot RX Assist, which is the letters RXASSIST.org, as one of the websites that I use to look for what medication programs are available. And then again, there are the $4 generic programs. So I want to just say that please let us know if you're having problems. If we don't hear from you, we assume everything's going okay. And if you are having challenges, a lot of times there's something we can do that would make it a little bit easier. So I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Lara. Those are wonderful hints. And again, I hope you've all jotted down little questions or comments or concerns that you have. I'm very happy now to introduce our final panelist, Teresa, known as Tracy Anderson Hayes. Tracy is a clinical transplant pharmacist and a professor joining us from Hennepin County Medical Center Transplant Program in Minneapolis. Tracy?
Thank you very much for the opportunity to participate in this discussion tonight. As a pharmacist, I'd just like to take a few minutes to remind you all why it is so vital to continue taking your medications as prescribed after your transplant and the repercussions of medication doses. Additionally, I'd like to emphasize the importance of lab follow-up and getting your blood draws as recommended and keeping contact with your transplant team for the life of your transplanted organ. As a follow-up to Rich's great advice, I'd like to highlight how the transplant team, which definitely includes you, can work together to improve adherence and compliance to the regimen. Amazingly, non-adherence to medications after transplant is really all too common. 20 to 25% of transplant recipients are non-compliant to prescribed therapies or blood draws, and higher percentages report missing a dose of medication from time to time. Non-adherence definitely increases over time, so patients more than 5 years out from transplant would be more likely to be non-compliant with medicines than patients that are, say, 2 weeks or 3 weeks out from transplant. But we can start seeing patients or recipients of transplants missing doses as early as 6 to 9 months after the transplant takes place. It's very important to understand that adherence involves not only taking your medications as prescribed, but also following through with recommended blood draws or lab checks, especially having drug levels monitored on a recommended schedule, which will vary depending on what center you received your transplant at. High levels or low levels can both be detrimental to transplant and, as Rich mentioned, caught early enough, these damages can be prevented. Not taking medication doses as prescribed is associated with transplant organ rejection, worsening function of that transplant, and of the transplant ultimately potentially failing. In fact, one study looking at kidney transplantations showed that half of the rejections taking place more than 6 months after the time of transplant are related to noncompliance with therapy, which is pretty significant. So you all know that medications are important to supporting the long life of your transplant. So why is adhering with this regimen so difficult? Well, the good news is life after transplant is great, and quality of life with transplant is oftentimes much improved from that with organ failure or dialysis. The most common reason that transplant recipients give for missing medication doses is, I forgot, and Rich's reminders with cell phone alarms or watch alarms are very useful. Life is busy, and we know that as your transplant team. Work and family schedules can interfere with medication dosing time. Transplant recipients may feel so good, you wonder if you really need to take all these medications, especially when side effects of your immunosuppression, blood pressure pills, or cholesterol medicines may make you feel worse because of side effects. As you know, taking 12 or 15 medications once, twice, or maybe three times a day is really hard, and we understand that. Never mind the high number of clinic visits that are needed in transplant recipients, as well as other providers that you need to go see. Taking care of your transplant at times can feel like a full-time job in and of itself. As Laura covered, the cost of these medications, of course, can be overwhelming, and we also understand that. Even if you get your copays at $3 or $4 for generic medications, when you have so many medications and other health care costs, it all adds up. So Rich gave you some great ideas of how to establish a routine and utilize reminders, many things that I tell my patients as well as a pharmacist working in a transplant clinic. And Laura's given you several resources that are available to ensure that you can get your medicines. I surely support all of those things and would encourage you to enlist the help of a support system, your family, your friends, and especially your transplant team. Pharmacists on your transplant team are a great resource and may have more insight into your regimen and resources that are available for a transplant recipient than your dispensing pharmacist or the pharmacist you may be more familiar with on a monthly basis. And that's not because they're inadequate, it's just that you may be their only transplant patient and it is a very confusing system to be able to navigate. So please feel free to utilize your pharmacist on your transplant team. Additionally, I have very good access to our transplant social worker, who, like Laura, is an excellent resource and can hook you up with resources that are the best for you in your individual situation. Most importantly, I would encourage you all to trust your transplant team. Please be honest with us about your adherence and barriers, including expenses that you're up against, so that we can help you break them down and find solutions that are individualized to make you a successful transplant recipient and ensure a long, healthy life for both you and your transplanted organ. And with that, I'll put it back to Kathy.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Tracy, and all our panelists. And now our faculty is going to join us. We have Troy and Deborah. And I say, when you ask the questions, try to focus it and maybe keep it to 2 or 3 minutes a question, so that way we can get everybody in. And then if we still have time, you can come back and ask a second question. If we can't get to you, and I hope we can, I think we can get to everybody today, but if we don't get to you, I'm going to have you go to our message board, at www.kidney.org. You can access all the message boards, the transplant recipient message board, and continue this discussion. And I will monitor it and use others to monitor it, and we'll see if we can get your questions answered and listen to your suggestions and your comments.
Mess again.
And with that, I will turn this over to the operator to open the line for questions.
Thank you, ma'am. At this time, anyone wishing to ask a question or make a comment, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. All questions will be taken in the order that they're received, and you'll be announced by name when we're ready for your question. Once again, anyone wishing to ask a question or make a comment, please press star 1, and please be sure that your line is unmuted and record your name when prompted. One moment for the first question, please. Ma'am, our first question comes from Andrea.
I have a suggestion as well as a question. My suggestion is I am on the oral. I get it free from the company. Roche Labs, I believe, is their company.
I think it's Novartis.
Novartis, thank you, and I'm sorry. Roche is one of the other ones. And it's just a form you have to, I mean, yes, you have to qualify for it, but if you're on disability, even with Part D and Part B as you're being on Medicare, if you can't afford it, you should apply for it because they send it to me free.
Beautiful.
So people need to know that.
Beautiful.
And they could do it themselves. They don't have to go to a social worker. The only thing is they need their doctor to write the script and sign the form.
Wonderful. And we have some information about that on our website, www.kidney.org. Thank
okay.
you.
And just one quick question.
Sure.
The HR law that they're trying to push for past 3 years, is that for new kidney transplant patients, or is it are they pushing it for all transplant patients? Because I'm already 12 years out.
I believe this is Troy Zimmerman. Can you hear me?
Yes, I do.
I believe that would. My understanding is it would only be for people who are still in their 3-year window.
What the legislation would do is.
You know, anybody who is age 65 or on Social Security disability, if you're SSDI or age 65 and you had a Medicare-covered transplant, those individuals already have lifetime Medicare Part B for the immunosuppressive. But if your Medicare eligibility is based solely on end-stage renal disease, so if you're under 65 and not disabled, then that is limited under current law to 36 months after the transplant. So
Right. It
would only apply to people if and when the legislation is enacted. It would only be for individuals who have not yet reached their 3-year limit. They wouldn't go back in and pick them up retroactively.
Okay, that's because a lot of people, knowing I'm out so much that it's a third transplant, they all ask me a lot of questions, so I like to have the correct answers for them. Thank you.
Absolutely. And this law would not help everyone. We've been chipping away with incremental changes and additions and improvements to Medicare and other laws of insurance. We'll continue to do that. Bit by bit, we hope to get coverage that will help everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Lynn Sampson.
Hi, this is Lynn Sampson, and it's a comment. My comment is that I run a nonprofit National Transplant Assistance Fund that helps pre-transplant patients raise funds through their families and their local communities for their uninsured medical expenses, and particularly for post-transplant meds and copays in a way that is tax-deductible and is not income to the patient. And if you're interested, please feel free to give us a call or check out our website at www.transplantfund.org, or you can call us at 800-642-8399. We also do work with post-transplant patients, but the community generally is more enthusiastic about fundraising pre-transplant because everyone thinks, as everyone knows, once you've had a transplant, that everyone's better, so they don't realize that there's all the expenses. So thank you.
Now, Lynn, you bring up an important point, is that many people prior to transplant may not think of that because they have Medicare, they have insurance, but even if you have that, you can do a fundraiser, a small fundraiser, rely on family and friends, and put a little stash away that can be held in your account to help with medical expenses that are unexpected or something happens. And again, planning this pre-transplant is often much more successful because after transplant, people who don't know tend to think everything's okay.
And it's very important to do it through a nonprofit because then it's not income to you, and people like the fiscal accountability of the fact that it's through a nonprofit. And then we pay for the copays directly to the pharmacy. We can set up pharmacy accounts, or we can reimburse the patient.
And you will find this and other resources like at the www.kidney.org. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Sure.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Lisa Miller.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. My question is what you mentioned earlier about Part D not picking up the 20% of the immunosuppressant drugs that Medicare does not pay.
Correct.
Is that true in all states?
This is Lara, and that is part of the regulations. When they developed Part D, they specifically said if a drug should be covered by B as in boy, D cannot help. So we've run into trouble with people who have lost their Part B as in boy, and D still won't help. So there needs to be other insurance to help with that 20% copay. Or as one of the earlier callers mentioned, there are assistance programs, as I had also mentioned, but there are assistance programs. But D will not pick up the 20%.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jacqueline Hobson.
Hi, Jacqueline.
Hello. I'm also a three-year kidney recipient. In fact, May 17th is the anniversary of my third year. I'm also a two-year employee of DaVita Dialysis, so I do have a job. And within the last 2 years, I've built up a pretty substantial savings, and everything that you have said as far as positively, the positivity towards a transplant, I've kind of followed, and I'm glad I'm coming into agreement. I just wanted to ask Rich, how difficult or how easy was it for you to transform from Medicare over to the insurance that you had now? Or I think I heard you mention, is anyone on the panel that actually had Medicare were able to transform from Medicare over to a new insurance and had to pay maybe more of a copay because maybe some of the other insurances didn't cover certain of the immunosuppression drugs?
Well, you know, in my case, this is Rich, I was always covered by commercial insurance, and so I never had a point where I had a gap, and so that was always primary.
Okay.
In my case, so I don't think I had quite the same situation.
This is Lara, and I actually talked to a gentleman today that had his three-year anniversary about a month ago, and his Medicare ended. He's also working, and was a little shocked when he went to the pharmacy because the copays through his current plan for one of his medications, they're quoting him $200. And so I need to do a little research. I need to do a little research to figure out if that really is the best coverage that he has through his job. But one option that there are two thoughts that I have. One is these copay assistance cards that I had mentioned. You could call the transplant program and they could help with those medicines. They can deduct up to $100 off every month for your medicines. The other thing that I'm going to do for this gentleman is call the insurance to see if he uses a 90-day mail order pharmacy. Is there a better copay? A lot of times if you use the mail order, you save a significant amount of money. So those are a couple of thoughts.
Okay. That's what I'm using, this 90-day mail order right now as I'm speaking. And anything to save, you know, whatever copay needs to be paid.
Yeah. So call your transplant nurse coordinator or social worker and have them mail you the copay cards for whatever medicines you're on, because it'll save a significant amount of money.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jane Dengel.
Hello, Jane.
Hi. I just turned 65, and I was told that I could get two of my very expensive drugs for free. So, okay, I go off to the pharmacist, and they were very helpful. But for the first 2 months, I must pay, like for the self-up, it's $196 and some cents. And then they say thereafter it's free. And then I'm on Zenagraft, and that was $20-some dollars.
This is Lara. Do you have a secondary insurance?
Yes. Well, my husband just retired, and we went with Humana.
Okay. So like a Medicare supplement plan?
Yes.
Okay. The Medicare supplement plans, they used to call them Medigaps, and I like that name because it reflects what they do. They fill in the gaps of Medicare. So Medicare supplement plans can be billed for the 20% copays. If Medicare is paying through Part B as in boy for your anti-rejection medicines, the Medicare supplement plans can pick up that 20% copay.
Okay.
It's possible that you have a deductible with that Medicare supplement, and after you meet the deductible, then your anti-rejection medicines would be covered fully.
Right.
Sounds like a deductible.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, and once again, if we have anyone wishing to ask a question or make a comment, please press star 1 and record your name at the prompt. Our next question comes from Krista Sherman.
Hi there.
Hi. I am 37 years old, and I am my transplant would have been two-time transplant recipient. It'll be 10 and a half years in August, or I'm sorry, 11 years in August. Unfortunately, right now, I'm in the middle of a divorce with my husband, and his health insurance. Once we're divorced, I will not have health insurance. Right now, I'm not able to find a job because there's just nothing around here. Do you have any answers, well, options of what I can do, you know, to pay for my medicine?
This is Catherine. I'll say one thing. As a divorced person, you should be able to pick up COBRA for 36 months.
Okay.
And I just talked to a transplant recipient that was able to take advantage of the new Obama COBRA help of getting 65% off that expensive cost that Rich had talked about. So if you're not, if you have other insurance, you're not eligible for that help. Like if you have Medicare or other insurance, but if you don't, that can make it more affordable. And I would say definitely look at that.
Yeah. The other thing to keep in mind is that when COBRA runs out, if you are eligible for it, then you're eligible through HIPAA to get individual coverage without any underwriting. Now,
right.
It won't be inexpensive, but you would be able to get coverage.
My husband has the military. He's a retired military. So I'm not sure if they have that through the military, the extra insurance.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I don't know the answer to that one.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay.
This is Lara. I would like to add also that the HealthWell Foundation, and I can give you their toll-free number.
Okay.
Which is 1-800.
Uh-huh.
675.
Okay.
8416.
Okay.
And their website is HealthWell, HealthWell Foundation, all run together.
Okay.
.org.
Okay.
And they have a program for people who are transplant recipients. They have an option, and you can qualify for assistance with the premiums. So with that COBRA plan, the grant can be up to $3,000 a year towards your premium cost.
Okay.
And it's a fairly simple application process. And if they can help you keep that insurance, at least buys you some time. If it ends up being that you're unable to get COBRA or manage the cost, then it's piecing together all of those different programs to take care of your 11-year-old baby.
Exactly. I kind of like my 11-year-old.
Yes, you want to keep it. Yeah.
Okay.
But we work with folks that these sorts of things happen, and you piece together a variety of things, and you make it work because it's a transition until something else happens.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Patricia Rich.
Hello, Patricia.
Oh, this isn't a question. I wanted to make a comment about insurance. I've run into a lot of problems, too. I have the Medicare, and my supplemental insurance now is ARP option. And I'll tell you, they do a very good job because you do not make any co-payments. like when you go to the doctors, if you have like a lot of doctor visits and everything, you don't make co-payments. And that is one nice thing about it. And it cost me about $161 a month. And then also I had to get another plan to pick up my prescription coverage for the other drugs besides the autoimmune suppressant drugs.
Yeah.
And I have Cigna for that. And I pay $1.10 for my generic, and I pay, I think, $3 or something like that for my brand.
Beautiful.
And I don't make no co-payments for my, like, I'm on CellCept and I'm on Prograf, and I do not make any co-payments at all.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, now, this is Debbie, and I'm just going to reiterate what everybody has been talking about. What you have is a Medigap policy, and your Medigap policy is picking up your 20% for your Part D medications,
yes.
He is a boy, as well as your doctor's visits and so forth. And that's what's so great about the Medigap policy.
Yes. And that's why I wanted to make a comment about that, because it has really helped me a lot.
Happy to hear that. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Lisa Miller.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I asked a question earlier about the 20% possibly being paid by Part D, and you said it wouldn't. I wondered, would I have a Medicare supplement also with American Continental Insurance Company? I wonder, would they possibly pay the 20%?
Yes.
Since it's a Medicare supplement?
Yes. Since Medicare is covering your anti-rejection medicines through Part B through the medical benefit, the Medicare supplements can pick up that 20% copay. In my experience, local retail pharmacies are not set up to bill more than one insurance, and this is definitely more of a paper-intensive process than a lot of things. So often people need to use the specialty pharmacies that are set up to do more complicated billing, but it definitely is something that they should be billing both of your insurances. You could talk to the folks at your transplant center to see which specialty pharmacies they have good working relationships with, and
okay.
And have them check it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Andrea.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi. I just want to mention something else about the, I still call them Medigaps also. Unfortunately, it depends on what state you live in. If you're on Medicare, I live here in the state of Florida, and if I'm on Medicare but I'm under 65 because I'm on it for disability,
mm-hmm.
there is no Medigap program available to me
yeah.
in the state of Florida. And so, like, you know, one thing might sound good to someone else and they want to do research, and, you know, you can get hold of some commissioners of the insurance company in your state, but there's different, every state has their own little, like, even just like Blue Cross Blue Shield, it's a different policy per state.
Right.
So, like, well, for me, that's why I'm always looking and listening to other people that maybe I can ask, because I'm paying that 20%.
Yeah.
The, you know, cost, and that's still awfully high.
Now, yeah. Troy, you're in the closing, but I believe, wasn't there a law, something just passed in Florida to make Medigaps available for people under 65?
There was. That was just passed about a week ago.
Okay, I didn't hear of that
yet. I don't know what the effective date is.
Yeah, I'm looking, I'm just seeing if I can find that. But there may be something very good coming your way. There are a number of states that do allow people under 65.
Yeah, there are about 16 or 18 states.
Right, I moved from New York, which I had it,
yeah.
and then I didn't know to
right.
look into it, thinking, well, all states are the same. Wrong mistake.
Right. They always check before you move. You know, always check to see what's
yeah.
available and the type of things before you get there. But be on the lookout, and I'm looking for it now, right, too, because there should be some changes coming to Florida.
Okay. because that is like my hardest situation, that I would love to have a policy. Nothing's been available, but I didn't realize something was, like, I knew it was down the pike. I didn't realize they just passed it, though.
They did pass it. I just don't, I don't know what, you know, what the effective date was.
Okay.
I can't imagine it would have, well, Kathy, I mean, wouldn't you think it would take a little bit of time for them to implement
sure.
it?
Sure.
I don't think they would say, you know, the day after the law was signed, because
right.
they had to be able to get
it
the
might be even like
money.
A year before.
Could be a year, or could be 6 months or something. We can look into it.
Okay.
Our local affiliate, the NKF of Florida, is in Orlando, and they worked on the legislation with the state legislature to get, you know, one of many groups that was working to try to get it passed, but we can find out.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sure.
That's a biggie.
Yeah.
This is Lara. I'd like to just mention again these foundations and the medication programs that a previous caller had noted, is that usually you think of the free medicine programs for people who have no insurance, but they often will also consider people who have significant copays that they have trouble managing. So your anti-rejection medicines, it's possible that you could qualify for free medicine from the manufacturers directly or one of these foundations to help with the copays.
Excellent.
Thank you. And once again, if we have anyone wishing to ask a question or make a comment, it is star one. One moment, please. And at this time, I'm showing no further questions.
Well, on behalf of the National Kidney Foundation, our panelists and faculty, thank you all so much.
Kathy, could I raise one question?
Sure.
And I don't know who could talk to this, maybe Deborah, but there's been a little bit of talk about Part B and Part D,
mm-hmm.
and I thought it might be good to clarify, and I hope I'm correct, that if you had Medicare eligibility under Part B when you received your transplant, if you're now enrolled in a Medicare Part D plan, you would still be receiving your immunosuppressive medications from Part B.
He's in boys. Yes,
he's
I
in
think
boys.
Lara or Tracy, somebody did discuss that. But yes, that is true that if you, first of all, if you must have Medicare covered transplants or in a Medicare approved facility,
correct.
So that means that you have your Part A. You are covered under Part A when you have the transplant. Then when you are going on to take your immunosuppressives, then you need your Part B. There are some issues where a person just takes their A and picks up the B later.
Right.
So you need that A. But once you're under A, I'm sorry, under the B for your immunosuppressives, you stay under B. Part D, you don't switch to Part D.
Correct. But you can get those medications under Part D if you were not eligible for
yes.
Medicare at the time of transplant.
Yes, you can. And that actually was a very big problem prior to that change, and that was a change in the law that when Part D came out, that individuals who are not eligible under B is for boys. Could get it
right.
under D.
Right.
People were getting transplants overseas, or they were getting donated kidneys in it, you know, from their homeland, and that was not a covered Medicare
right.
transplant.
But to add to the confusion, one of the persons on the question tonight, one of the individuals said, if you have B, you cannot use D for your copay for the immunosuppressive drug.
Right.
So it's complicated.
True. You can't
take
both. The D and then pick up your and then
right.
pick up the 20%
right.
under D. No, D is for other prescriptions, and that's, you know, that's a whole different story.
Correct.
You can't work them together, although both D and D are both part of the Medicare program.
Thank you.
Thank you both. And as I'm wrapping up this call, do we have final thoughts from the panelists that you'd like to share?
Well, this is Lara Tuchel. I would just like to say for the person who was talking about COBRA for the military folks that there is something, I'm looking on their website, and there is something similar to COBRA. It's got a different name, but it looks like there's a similar concept. So I just wanted to add that.
Thank you. Thank you, Lara, for looking at that. And that's a lot of times what we have to do is break into the system, just start asking questions, searching around, and finding out, not giving up. And social workers tend to do that very well, and so do transplant recipients. You learn by necessity. So don't give up. Other comments? Final words? Well, I think I speak for everyone when I say, on behalf of our panelists and faculty and the National Kidney Foundation, thank you for joining us tonight. This caller will be podcast, and you can listen to it or tell people about it. You'll be able to find it on the Coffee House Conversation site, which is accessible through www.kidney.org. You can add a /coffeehouse and to get there right away. Now, if you enjoyed this call, tune in again on June 1st, another Monday night, 7 p.m., for a panel of experts discussing nutrition and fitness after transplant. And all the resources that we talked about today, you'll be able to find on the transaction website under resources. And you can always call 800-622-9010. Now I'm going to ask you to stay on the line for just another 2 minutes or so, because the operator is going to take a quick yes or no poll with you. It'll give us some important feedback on how helpful this call was to you today. And because it's just yes and no, if you have other questions or comments about the call, do call me, 800-622-9010, or email us at coffeehouse@kidney.org. Thank you so much for your participation. Kind regards and good night. Operator?
Thank you, ma'am. At this time, we do ask that the audience remain online to answer 4 simple questions for us. One moment, please. Thank you. At this time, we'll begin this evening's polling. We do have 4 questions that we would like to ask you to work with us this evening, and they are very simple questions. And the first question is, did you gain a better understanding of the topic? Please press *1 for yes. Please press *2 for no. Again, did you gain a better understanding of the topic? *1 for yes. *2 for no. Thank you. Question 2 this evening is, did you understand each panelist's presentation? Did you clearly understand each panelist's presentation? Again, it is *1 for yes, *2 for no. Once again, the question was, did you understand each panelist's presentation? *1 for yes, *2 for no. Thank you. One moment, please. Our third question this evening is, was the call the right amount of time? And once again, it is *1 for yes, *2 for no. And the question again is, was the call the right amount of time? *1 for yes, *2 for no. Thank you. And our final question this evening is, will you tell others to join the Coffee House Conversation telephone calls? *1 for yes, *2 for no. And again, the question is, will you tell others to join the Coffee House Conversation telephone calls? *1 for yes, *2 for no. Thank you. This concludes today's conference. We appreciate your participation, and you may disconnect at this time.